I will at least do a safety briefing for us, and we can kick things off that way. Oh, I was just getting started in doing our safety briefing. Please note that we are on the third floor of this building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit through the door in the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk downstairs. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception down to Grand Avenue, and a fire extinguisher is located in the corridor along the side of the dais just behind the wall here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for kicking off the meeting. All right. We have one work session. Well, I have two work session topics, one big presentation. We've got Roy Brower coming forward. You want to come on up? And who do you have with you?
This is Dan Boyle.
When you get into the microphone, you can introduce him.
We ready?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure Alma was ready to go here. Okay, good afternoon. My name is Roy Brower. I'm your interim Property and Environmental Services Director. And with me today is Dan Blue, who is your Property and Stewardship Manager, Planning Manager, actually, not Property. Today we're seeking guidance on future infrastructure development for the solid waste system. As you may recall, at our last work session on this topic, we were asked to develop some scenarios and seek council's advice on moving forward. So today we plan to focus the discussion on two parts of the region, the South and the West, and we have about 30 minutes for each side. So we're going to talk about the South side first and the West second. The South is where we see a major improvement, a need for a major improvement in the delivery of services for all the users at Metro South and in that part of the region, including public and commercial customers, and address concerns around types and level of service, traffic, increased customer volume and wait times, and safety. We'll also look at the west side, where there are currently no public services being provided as at the same level as in Oregon City or in North Portland. For context, I will remind you, and some of the councilors who have been around for a while, remind you that many years ago, the council was not even convinced that Metro should be in the waste business. And we considered at that time whether to get out of the business entirely. More recently, I think Metro has come to the realization that this is a vital resource and an important public benefit is in owning and operating these facilities and providing the level of services, both recycling and other types of services provided to the public. In most jurisdictions around the U.S. and Canada, the solid waste systems are operated as public utilities, and they're wholly owned and operated by the local governments with public employees. And this is true in Seattle, King County, and Tacoma. Here we have a hybrid system, which was a recommendation a number of years ago to continue forward, but not necessarily a perfect system. So in seeking to make these changes to the regional solid waste system, we looked closely at the council's six desired outcomes and, of course, the regional waste plan and council's other goals. And we're seeking to create a system that moves away from solid waste being a liability, as it often is considered in many places, to becoming more of an asset for communities with improved and enhanced services. The proposals that we are working on are focused beyond end-of-life management of garbage and taking into account things like jobs, service levels, equitable access, more recycling, reduction of GHGs, and building resilience into the system. We will review a number of scenarios for both the locations, both south and west, potential timing and rollout for site acquisitions, community engagement, and determining the types of services offered at each location. As I mentioned, with me today is Dan Blue, Planning and Stewardship Manager in PES. Also here from the project team, I just wanted to mention for South, Esty Siegel is here. Over here, is Chevy here? I don't see it. Chevy Pham from Communications. On the west side, Matt Tracy, Enrique Vargas, and working on both the south and the west are Gloria Pinzon from Communications, Luis Sandoval, who just had a child and is at home taking care of the child, and Bryce Emig, who is with as our Hatfield Fellow, who's working on these projects.
So and can I just quick interrupt?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Did you want to finish that thought? I thought you were done.
I just one last person to introduce
Yes.
is the star of everything we do down in the South, and that's Penny Erickson. She's superintendent at Metro South Station. So she is with us today as well.
Superstar. I just want to clarify, there's another policy outcome or that you wanted to discuss today. We're narrowing that agenda because of time. You had asked for a conversation around finances, which I think you're going to come back with a recommendation once you get direction on where we're going, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then there was also a discussion about an infrastructure plan, system
yes.
plan. That will be discussed
at a later time.
At a later time.
Well.
I just want to clarify what was in the packet. We're narrowing it down just to talk about the direction.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So just a quick reminder, the south part of Metro is really a focus on safety and service. The west part is a focus on resilience and access. And the central part of Metro is really related to food recovery. Now, we're not going to be talking about food at this particular session. We're coming back, in fact, on an October 29th work session to talk explicitly about food, local adoption of requirements, and plans for Metro Central taking on food slurry making. So just a very quick reminder of the types of facilities we're talking about today. These are transfer facilities. These are facilities that receive, consolidate, and deliver garbage from primarily businesses and commercial customers, but in some cases also from public self-haul customers. Currently, only Metro South and Metro Central and Forest Grove transfer stations take any public customers. That is, your household customers, pickup trucks or vans or whatever. All the others are basically commercial facilities. So I just remind you, we have three private stations out in the east, City of Roses, Troutdale, which is owned by Waste Management, and Gresham Sanitary, which is a locally owned transfer station. We have three in the south, Pride Disposal, which is a local owned business, WRI, which is owned by Republic Waste Services, a national company, and then, of course, Metro South. To the west, we currently only have the Forest Grove transfer station on the far western border. So we're really focused on facilities that are transferring waste and what their role is in the system. We're not talking about, for instance, dry waste recovery facilities like ECR or Greenway or Tualatin Valley Waste Recovery in Hillsboro. We're not talking about MRFs or material recovery facilities, such as the one some of you visited earlier today. We're not talking about compost facilities. So those are all parts of the solid waste system, but not part of the topic for today. And as if you have questions as we go along, feel free to interrupt me. We will have time as we go along for some questions. So you should, maybe you haven't seen the aerial view, but this is Metro South Station. This is a 30-year-old, fairly crowded facility. It was never really designed for the mix of commercial and business construction and residential users that we're getting at this site. We're taking in, if you count the household hazardous waste collection facility, commercial traffic, and public traffic, about 300,000 customers per year, and it's growing at about a 3% increase per year, number of customers. It requires us to have a large number of staff to control traffic and loads, load checking, and just basically make sure that there's safe passage through the facility. One thing I will point out right here between the two buildings, every vehicle that comes in here has to go through that area. And it's all great until you got a garbage truck and a small van coming through that area. And sometimes it gets a little tedious through there. The buildings are not really large enough or located well to operate efficiently. We've had problems with long wait times, which are increasing, and just safety concerns on the site. There's basically not enough space or capacity to provide other types of services that we would like to be able to provide in this part of the region, such as recycling, more waste sorting, things like styrofoam recycling or mattress recycling or some of those kinds of things we're not able to provide on this limited location. Another missing piece is no commercial food reloading or pre-processing capacity or room in this area, although we're having some fruitful discussions with Clackamas County about the WES facility, the Water Environmental Service facility across the highway, and there may be some possibilities developing there. So our objectives and outcomes, consistent with the six desired outcomes and regional waste plan, is really to improve customer and staff safety at Metro South, expand and improve public and commercial services in this part of the region, expand recycling and recovery, and especially opportunities for expanded recycling and recovery, and adding the food reload and pre-processing capacity to that part of the region. So I'm going to let Dan take over here in just a moment. I've got one other thing. Council President's already talked about it a little bit. We're not going to talk about a financing plan at this point. We do have some numbers in here about high-level cost estimates. We have based these on what we've learned in going up to some of the facilities in the Seattle area about what it costs to build a modern transfer station, and so we've applied some of that here to some of these scenarios. So we don't have high confidence in these numbers, but they at least will give you some kind of a ballpark range. We will, as we develop this and figure out the best way to move forward with your help, we will be coming back working with Finance and Regulatory Services to develop a more robust financial picture and plan. So with that, Dan?
Okay. Thank you, Roy. Good afternoon, Council President Peterson, members of Council. My name is Dan Blue. I'm the Planning and Stewardship Manager for Solid Waste Operations. I oversee Metro Paint, the closed St. John's landfill, and then a team of planners working in Solid Waste Operations to support our existing transfer stations and also plan additional new stations, hopefully. That's why we're here today. So thanks for having me here. As you know, PES has been investigating options for addressing issues at Metro South Station for a number of years. Today we'd like to get your feedback on three different scenarios that we're currently considering for the South Project. The first scenario is also the current path that we've been pursuing for the last few years, and that is to identify a suitable location for moving self-haul services, including household hazardous waste, expanded recycling, waste recovery, additional waste recovery, and other community-facing services, and then go back and retrofit the existing Metro South station to better accommodate commercial trucks and also create room to reload and process commercial food waste, as Roy mentioned. We cannot do food waste and reload currently just due to space constraints. The second scenario would instead move commercial services to a new location and then redevelop Metro South for improved self-haul services. And then the third scenario would be to move all services to a large, multifunction, modern transfer station and then repurpose Metro South Station for some other to-be-determined function. Those are the scenarios at a high level. Next slide, I'm going to go into some of the sort of opportunities and challenges with each. Okay, so starting with scenario one, and again, this is our current trajectory, which is to move the self-haul to a new facility and then retrofit Metro South Station for commercial services. Opportunities here include likely it would be our least cost option, and we estimate, again, somewhere between $80 and $120 million. We would repurpose South for commercial and food waste reload and processing. A new public self-haul facility could include other community services, such as an education center, reuse or exchange services, and other community-facing elements that would help us realize the goals and vision of the 2030 Regional Waste Plan, which you recently adopted. Challenges associated with the first scenario is it's difficult to find a suitable site. And I'll just say that's actually true for all of these scenarios. There are exactly zero suitable industrial sites available on the market today in this part of the region. Another challenge is that the public is used to the current location, and they would have to be retrained to move to a different site. There's also potential traffic impacts with moving those 200,000-plus self-haul customers, and that may additionally limit our siting options. On to scenario two.
So that just brings up a good point.
Sure.
And I would like to get on the record that you've done an estimate on the actual capital investment on the site that does not include any improvements that we may be required to make within the jurisdiction that we actually work with.
This is true, yeah. Okay. There, one of the properties that we'll talk about in a little bit, we kind of have a sense of what additional capital improvements might be needed, and there's a site that we're looking at where we have some thoughts about what that could look like, but we're not quite there yet on that one.
Yeah, but I just want to be clear that we don't have any kind of cost estimate on any of that included in here.
And I think it's a really good point to make. These are preliminary cost estimates. They're very low confidence. They will change dramatically once we get direction and go through the whole planning process. We wanted to provide a ballpark because that's important to the conversation, but I don't want anyone to take more away from this than what they are.
Right. No, but it definitely doesn't include anything that a local jurisdiction would ask of us to make improvements in order to accommodate the vehicles.
Correct.
Trips. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you for that clarification.
Or any environmental or other issues.
Yeah. And we'll, on a later slide, we'll go into a little more detail on where some of the costs are and the phasing.
Okay.
So we'll get to that. Moving to scenario two, and again, an estimated planning cost of $140 to $180 million. On the opportunity side, it would be easier to relocate and site the 34,000 commercial trucks per year than it would be to move the 200,000 self-haul. And this scenario would keep self-haul at its current and very familiar location for existing customers. On the challenge side with scenario two, we know that this would likely be our highest cost option due to the fact that we'd essentially be building two new stations in the south part of the region. A new commercial facility that allows also for commercial food waste, reload and processing, plus rebuilding the existing Metro South station to meet the operational needs for self-haul, household hazardous waste, and to address all the goals in the regional waste plan. Finally, it would be difficult to rebuild the Metro South station while maintaining self-haul services at that site. The question essentially becomes, where do we move 200,000 annual customers during construction? At this point, we don't have a good answer for that. The third option, this would be to find a suitable parcel of property and build a full-scale modern transfer station with a range of both commercial and cell phone services. This single facility would need to be large enough to meet current demand and future growth needs for the south part of the region. This option, we estimate, would cost around $100 to $130 million. The opportunities here include building one modern, intentionally designed facility to meet all user needs in the south part of the region. Educational elements such as tours would benefit from having the full range of services located at one site. Operational efficiencies could be realized through concentrating staffing, equipment, fleet, and maintenance functions at one site. And we'd also optimize loading and compaction efficiencies by having both commercial route solid waste mixed with lighter, fluffier self-haul waste so that we can get good density in our compactors. The challenges with Scenario 3 is that it would retain having both commercial and self-haul at the same facility, so some of the same challenges we have today. We'd also have to re-educate and redirect all of our current Metro South customers to a new and unfamiliar location. And this scenario would also require a large parcel of industrial land to accommodate this range of services, which is likely a heavy lift, as I mentioned earlier.
Can I suggest we stop here, see if you have any questions on the scenarios, anything we could go into more detail on?
I guess I just, I'm not quite sure how we would approach the zero sites available question. And then I wasn't sure where we were in terms of the how do these compare in any ongoing operational costs? And not only the issues of where it may be located and special requirements there, and that might be not just capital, there's certainly that, but the ongoing of one option versus the other and what that does to the operational costs.
At Metro South in particular?
I guess I'm looking at these three. Are there financial ramifications of picking one of these over another in terms of the ongoing costs for us on a regular operating basis?
Like operations.
Just daily operations and other things that the jurisdictions may need from us to facilitate a good relationship with the community.
So I'll take the second one first. The ongoing costs, having two facilities are going to, we're not going to benefit from some of the efficiencies of having everybody co-located on one site. A modern transfer station, as we've seen up in the north part of the region, they're well designed, takes fewer resources to operate generally. And so if we have multiple sites, we're going to have some duplication of services, and there are those ongoing cost considerations. They are not spelled out in what's before you. The first question, what are we doing about the problem of zero land available? I can take a moment to explain that. And we have a fairly robust process in place where we are evaluating virtually all industrial parcels in a siting area that is the south part of the region, all the way north to approximately Foster Road, a little from the river to a few miles to the east of I-205. That's a lot of industrial land. As I said, very few properties, or actually none, that meet our specific criteria are for sale today. So we're narrowing down those very many properties to a handful, where we will be out contacting property owners to see if we can develop some willing seller relationships.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
And I know you might not be ready to answer this question yet, but to follow up on Metro Council President's question regarding the transportation side of things, one of the values of having South is where it is right at I-205. It's really pretty easy to get in and out of. And I assume that's going to have to be a big part of the thought and your plans for the future. Because if you purchase a new facility, a land for a new facility off too far off the freeway, mm-hmm. you could really, really influence congestion wherever you put it. So that's, I assume you're already thinking about that. And then the question is, are you far enough along to explore just how much infrastructure transportation costs we'd have to pick up for a facility like this? I assume it's pretty significant. I mean, how far out does that reach go where we would have to be responsible for seeing that there's capacity on the roads to support this facility?
Well, I guess we're looking at that, but until we sort of identified two or three main sites, which would be a part of that next round of scrutiny about whether these would be good sites or not, and then it depends on whether you're moving, mostly self-haul traffic or you're moving, garbage trucks someplace. Both have implications that's part of what we're looking at too. We're trying to keep it in a narrow band from where Metro South is located, mostly up the I-5 corridor there. And we're, as Dan said, we're mostly not finding property, although we've got a couple that we're looking at and at least talking to an owner about. So.
If I may follow up on that, we have established a base and functional criteria to evaluate any potential property, acreage, transportation impacts, proximity to residential neighborhoods, schools, churches, access points, traffic around the existing property. We're using all of those criteria to evaluate each property, and so absolutely we're taking into consideration and also meeting with local government and our elected officials, local government elected officials, to explore, what are the big concerns around siting a facility anywhere in that general siting zone. So, any other questions before I jump back in? Okay, so as mentioned earlier, we have been working off of guidance to move self-haul services and household hazardous waste from the current Metro South station to another location. This direction was based in part on work that HDR Engineering did in reviewing the feasibility of moving self-haul services across the street from the current station to the landfill, as well as guidance coming out of the solid waste roadmap process, which some of you were very participant in. We've asked HDR to conduct another study currently to evaluate the feasibility of moving commercial services and rebuilding Metro South Station for strictly self-haul, HHW, and other public-facing services. Initial findings from that work, which aren't quite done yet, but initial findings confirm that moving commercial, rebuilding Metro South for self-haul is the most costly option and presents the most significant continuity of operations challenges for us. So I think it's important that council know that staff are currently diligently working on opportunities to secure industrial lands in the south part of the region, even though nothing suitable is for sale today. We do anticipate that we can secure a potential site or sites within the next 6 months. So Roy referenced that. We are looking at a couple of parcels. We think it's important that Metro remains flexible in our planning to take advantage of opportunities that we develop with landowners in the south part of the region. With that in mind, and to ensure that we best elevate the goals and objectives of the 2030 waste plan, we're recommending that we remain flexible to pivot our planning work if the land acquisition process presents us with an opportunity to reconsider which services go where while continuing planning work to move the self-haul to a new location. So continue our trajectory, which is move self-haul, but be open to the possibilities that a particular parcel of land would provide to us. And again, if we stay on this course, we would then go back to Metro South Station and reconfigure it for commercial services only, assuming we do move self-haul.
So what I'm hearing,
yep,
is that your recommendation is to continue on moving self-haul under the assumption that you'll be looking at property that could be configured for that.
Yep.
Since there's limited sites. But if something were to become available that was larger and could accommodate and get efficiencies, both on the construction of the Capitol and the ongoing costs, you would come back to us and ask us if that is what we wanted to do. And I guess my only question as a follow-up on that is our host city, Oregon City, are they wanting to retain us? Or are they, I mean, I think that's just something that we need to have in the back of our heads of what are their expectations at this point? Were there negotiations around that, and should we be aware of that? Yes.
I would say it's not clear. I've heard some elected officials say that this is keeping this Metro South station there is not in their future plans. I've heard others that like the idea that it's there and think we should partner up more with Clackamas County and the West water treatment facility. And so I don't know that we have a definitive answer on that.
So we would go back to our partner, our host city, if there was a change in course and have a follow-up discussion and an actual proposal.
Yes, and we've actually begun meeting with staff-level people at both Oregon City and Clackamas County as we go through this process to keep them informed and get their feedback as we look at, consider properties, and develop a more coherent community engagement plan.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. So, assuming that Council supports the staff recommendation, I'm going to step through what phasing of property acquisition, design, engagement, due diligence, construction could look like. And so I have to remember to make sure I click the button enough times. So we anticipate potentially identifying and securing a property or properties within the next 6 months. Once secure, we would proceed with due diligence work while simultaneously working with local governments, community-based organizations, and others to conduct a robust community engagement process around the siting project. Securing a property, conducting due diligence, is estimated to cost approximately $200,000. Property acquisition could cost between $10 and $12 million for a suitable property. I'm sorry?
Eight to 12.
If all goes well during due diligence and engagement work, we would start the design and build process, which could take 3 to 3.5 years, and cost perhaps $10 million for design and $5 to $10 million for design and $60 to $100 million to build, and potentially could be complete in 4 years. Design work for retrofitting the existing Metro South station for commercial and food waste would take about a year and cost $1.5 to $2 million. Reconstruction costs to reconstruct the existing facility could cost between $10 and $20 million. And again, these are planning level estimates only. Reconstruction of Metro South Station could not occur until the new South Hall facility is open, but presumably design, engineering, permitting, et cetera, could be done during the construction of the South Hall facility and thus be staged and ready to go once South Hall customers actually move off of the South site. Please note that the blue shading represents costs that would be borne by existing solid waste reserve funds, while design and construction costs would be paid for by construction bond funds with a potential payback period of approximately 20 years. As Roy mentioned, we will be coming back to you with more information about how to finance these investments should we do them at a later date. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Roy.
So the question for council that we'd appreciate your feedback on is, which scenario do you prefer? Remind you, the scenarios are move public South Hall, move commercial, or move both and repurpose Metro South.
Councilor Lewis.
Thanks. So I guess just to start, over the past 9.5 months, I've been out to Metro South 4 or 5 times. Everything between going to visit on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of summer and the peak of do-it-yourself project season to evening tours with elected officials when there's nary a person on the road. So I've seen it in all states. And I think the thing that isn't part of this PowerPoint is, you know, underscoring the problem statement and the cross-traffic, the inefficiencies, the fact that this is a 30-year-old site that is breaking down in kind of human potential and also kind of operationally because we're mixing purposes. So I do think that the scenarios presented around South Hall, commercial, or both are the right scenario list. And I am definitely supportive of remaining flexible. I am excited to hear that the willing seller kind of conversations will include the potential for a site big enough for both. I think that is a steep hill to climb. So while I really like it and want to put like lots of exclamation points on that being something I want to explore, my more optimistic but practical self thinks that getting a final analysis on moving commercial is going to be really important before we cross that off the list. A couple of things picking up from the discussion. The opportunities presented by this site and the location of West just across the highway and the river, I think food on this site is going to potentially be really important for food scrap policy implementation. And then also in considering household hazardous waste, I don't want there to be a wrong door for HHW if there's any way to continue to provide HHW services on site, even if we do move the rest of, or also have HHW in a new South Hall facility. I'm excited by the prospect of providing really good services to customers who trek south or live south, everything from the services they get now to the potential for reuse and other community services. So my preferred outcome on this is yes, remain flexible, move that number 3 up to number 1, but also keep pushing on 1 and 2.
Councilor Gonzalez.
Thank you for the presentation, Dan and Roy. I was going to ask a question, but I think Councilor Lewis addressed it. What's the cost of doing nothing, which is clearly would be a huge issue. Yeah. But I think it's important also is to continue to flesh out that problem statement. I support what Councilor Lewis mentioned in terms of option 3, although it is the most expensive, feels like it depends on the operation cost, but getting those two things working at maximum efficiency feels like the best option just for the future. Similar to her, I'd say that 1 and 2 should be thoroughly explored, and option 1, the direction that you're heading in, is good. I did have some questions about other outcomes as identified by the regional waste plan. Throughout the timeline in the process, with the local government community engagement, the design, build, the reconfiguring, can you tell me a little bit more about kind of the workforce goals, the contracting goals, how we anticipate projects of this scale impacting communities of color, communities in this part of the region, and how we can expect that to generate jobs?
Happy to. So thank you for that question, Councilor Gonzalez. We have put together some potential engagement plans, and there's this kind of tension between do we do high level before we find a site, or do we hold off and dive right in once we pin down a particular property, because the conversation can change. In the old days, solid waste facilities, there's an acronym, it was called DAD. You decide to build a facility, somebody help me with DAD. What is it?
Approved, defend.
Yeah, so you locate a property, you decide to build on it, then you defend your decision. We're going about this very differently. We're going to try to secure property, take it off the market, engage deeply with communities that have not historically been at the table around on conversations around siting these facilities, get feedback from education, from health, from multi-housing tenants, from low-income communities, from the houseless communities, work with community-based organizations in these two parts of the region to learn as much as we can and get as much feedback about what are the opportunities and impacts of this type of modern facility. And we're using a different approach. We're going to try to secure it, we're going to engage the community, and then we're going to make a decision about whether we're going to proceed with building on that. And frankly, I've said this publicly, and I'll keep saying it, I feel like we need to listen to those voices, and if a facility is not the right fit for that community, and particularly those voices who haven't been at the table, then we should repurpose that for some other purpose and not build that facility there. So that's sort of where I'm coming from in all of our engagement work. Happy to share draft engagement plans with you at a later date.
All right, thank you.
Just one other follow-up on the jobs piece. One of the things that we will be looking at and talking with council in the future is should we contract out the operation or should we run that with Metro employees? As you know, we've at Metro South, because of the safety concerns and inability to secure a contractor to do the flagging and traffic control down there, we're instead of putting a contractor on that, we're moving to hire, and we'll be bringing this as part of the November budget amendment, to hire 13 new Metro employees, and we're working with both Constructing Hope and Oregon Tradeswomen to serve as pipelines to fill those positions. And that, as we think about building these facilities, this is going to be a critical part of the path forward of jobs and hiring and how we address some of our, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. So
I'd like to clarify and then maybe have Councillor Craddock and Councillor Chase weigh in, because I'm on the same page as Councillor Lewis and Councillor Gonzalez, and I just kind of want to move this forward so we have time to talk about everything. But it sounds to me like we're not actually on the remain flexible but not stay the course. I think what you're actually hearing is that we are interested as a body in the moving the complete facility, if that's feasible. Am I hearing that correctly? And if there's nothing on the market that is large enough to accommodate that, we're still moving forward, we're trying to find sites, and that then you go to the self-haul. But what I'm hearing is that the goal is to have a much more cost-effective, much more efficient, modern operation that will last us for the future on one site. Am I hearing that correctly? Do you have an amendment to that?
I think you've been hearing that correctly, and I agree with that assessment, and I have a comment, too, if that's the time.
I'm still ambivalent. I would agree with your point. I don't know if that's my position yet, but I mean I'm open. I keep going back and forth looking at the cost, and obviously when it all comes together, we'll know what to do. There's so many different factors. The point I wanted to make is we've got to take into consideration like you mentioned, the location of this and the impact on transportation. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect place for it right now because it's right by the freeway. But if this is moved even a mile off the freeway, it totally changes the dynamic and the benefit this can bring to.
We would debate that.
I think there's some serious transportation issues, both from the local road that literally gets backed up because we have a driveway full of cars, and then there are cars that are making U-turns in the Home Depot parking lot, and then it's on the side street. But also 205 and the Abernathy Bridge, we're not moving fast or hard enough on that. That's for another day. I'll get off that soapbox. But I think if we have uncertainty about the Abernathy Bridge, doesn't make a lot of sense to double down on this site.
Makes sense.
And also, the mayor of Oregon City last week told me we had 10 years before we were going to have neighbors doing, you know, all sorts of things not trash-related right next door on the old landfill site. I don't know if I believe 10 years, but their Main Street and downtown plan is intended to continue westward.
Councilor Chase?
I would say that, you know, I agree that the long-term, the moving and both and repurposing is seems like a good long-term strategy in terms of managing our facilities. I guess, you know, I like your proposal in terms of a way to move forward and say, you know, at some point we've got to move forward. And with a very, hard time finding sites, I think that's probably where we need to go. And I appreciate the staff recommendation on that. I wonder if giving some more time to the process before sort of committing to say, well, we couldn't find anything. By June-ish or so. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's some more flexibility in the timeline to create some more options for some of those larger pieces. The one component that I think makes a difference for me, too, though, in where to land is just a better understanding of how this – I'll put a little bit different definition to flexibility that's been used a lot, which is – how is it flexible in terms of this, what feels to me like this incredibly quick changing environment in the solid waste world, which is, you know, I'm thinking about, mattress recycling could really become, you know, much more of an independent big thing. There's plastic, you know, how we handle plastics and whether we're handling things in separate strategies and containers or, you know, there's changes in how we collect and technology, the compost, and whether we're taking on some big new strategy around, you know, prepping the compost for where we take it next. The thing that reminded me of this is, you know, this recent DEQ ruling about identifying asbestos in our in some of the dry waste that's taken to construction waste that's taken to facilities. You know, I think people are incredibly confused about what that ruling means and how to implement it and where do you take it to get tested. You know, folks are struggling to figure that out. And then, oh, you can take it to Hillsborough, it looks like, but where do you take it to test first? And how, I mean, it's just there's confusion. And so I could imagine that our facilities and locations would need to be flexible in how they're operating over time. And I could see some significant shifts in how that's operating. And I guess my question is, how is that informing the design and the approach and where it's best for us to go out of these scenarios?
I would say it's informing what we're doing quite a bit. And again, we're learning from the Seattle King County experience and what they're doing with the build out of their facilities. Being public utilities, they have more of a planning infrastructure replacement approach than we have had. But one of the things that they're doing is building their facilities with much more flexibility to, you know, sort of ebb and flow with the type of waste and the type of customers and the type of recycling needs and the types of materials that are coming through the facility. They're just much more, I mean, they're big buildings with no impediments, and just having something like that gives you so much more flexibility than what we have, where we have buildings all over the site and then we have big pillars in the middle. Makes it hard to move traffic, hard to move the big trucks. So yes, that is one of the things we're looking at.
And does the moving both give you the a significantly higher level of flexibility for that specific approach than just moving the cell hall?
It could. I think it's all in how we design it, how we make the traffic flow. As Dan mentioned, I mean, there was one facility that they actually have lines painted. So when you come in as a customer, you follow the line, the green line if you have yard debris, you follow the blue line if you're taking in recycling, you follow another color if you're a commercial hauler. Actually, they're diverted right as they come in. So there's all kinds of new design elements out there that I think we can just use to our advantage to make our facilities work a whole lot better for customer service and the public.
And we could use our metro paint for those lines.
And we can use our metro paint, and we can take in more metro paint through the facilities.
So we need to, we're almost at an hour now, and we're going to spend 30 minutes. The reason I asked us to be that clear is that if you're looking for a parcel size that is for just the South Hall, that is one way that you are going. And if you end up with more land, you could potentially do both. However, I think what I heard and why I wanted to be clear about it is that maybe you're looking for a much larger parcel size. And if we can't find anything and we still have to move, there might be a phasing in, there might be, you might come back. So I'm that's why I'm being really wanting to be clear about this, is that if the will of the council is to look at eventually moving it all off that site, whether it's in one fell swoop or over time, you need to be looking for a larger site. And so I wanted to be clear about that, that you're not looking for a small site and hope to God someday we might be able to get a site next door.
Right.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay.
So I'm just, again, checking in with a council member.
But there's also factors here that I have to say we didn't discuss that are, I think, could really influence us that we need to take into consideration.
And that would be?
Based on what Oregon City's goals are, is like you just said, the impact on, again, back to transportation, the impact, you know, future transportation,
yeah.
All of that is.
Yeah, I think they're going to come back with more information based on what sites they find available, correct?
Correct.
But I wanted to be clear about whether it was you're looking for a large site and you just happen to find some small sites, or whether you're looking for a small site and you just happen to find a large site.
And that's incredibly
there's a difference
helpful,
in intent.
Yes, incredibly helpful guidance to know that we can go look for a larger site if that's out there and available, and then we can work through whatever right phasing and traffic
right. And
so on. So
it becomes more clear once you know that there are actual sites to
right.
do X or Y. So
yes,
yeah.
Okay.
And thank you, President. I know that this conversation is necessary in terms of how we move forward, because we can ask you for a bunch of data around alternatives and trade-offs, but you can't do any of that until you have a site and you can do more of that analysis and due diligence. What I will say is that, you know, the flexibility in terms of prioritizing number three is true, but I am in line with Councillor Craddock in terms of it's really ambiguous right now. You know, it's just really high level. We think this would be great.
Sure.
But when it comes to, I mean, having data when we can analyze those things, whether it's wait times for the customer, impact on rates, amount of tonnage or amount of visit, I mean, just concrete things that we can
right.
eventually
yeah.
analyze would be really helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for finishing the thought. Good points.
Are you ready to move to the west?
Are we ready? Yes, please.
Okay, on the west side, really a different situation out there, as I mentioned earlier. There are no public services on the west side for recycling, hazardous waste collection, self-haul. All the services are currently being provided by the private sector. Forest Grove is the one transfer station that is in that part of the region. Hillsboro Landfill, located just outside of the city of Hillsboro, is a dry waste landfill. TVWR, Tualatin Valley Waste Recovery, is a dry waste MRF. Okay. Far West Recycling has a facility out there where they process a lot of the recycling, much like some of you saw today at Pioneer. They take a lot of the curbside recycling. In this part of the region, the rates and access to services are pretty inconsistent. The rates are pretty high. And I'll give you a personal example. I took a load to Metro Central Sunday. Cost me $28. Same load at Forest Grove would have been $107. So you can sort of get a feel of the difference there. Another reality is, and I wish Councillor Stacy were here, Starting January 1, Riverbend Landfill will no longer be a disposal option for waste leaving the metro region. That is one of the things that made Forest Grove most attractive, is they had a 35-mile haul to a landfill. There's no commercial food waste reload or pre-processing capacity on the west side. Although Recology does have a compost facility that takes in yard debris and residential food waste in North Plains. So that's sort of the situation on the west side. So our objectives there are a little different, but similar. We're trying to establish publicly provided services in the west and expand access, improve overall system resiliency. And one aspect of that is both of our stations are built on liquefaction soil. If we were to have an earthquake, it's not clear that either or both would survive. We think it makes sense to build more resilience into the system by locating some of these facilities that are meeting seismic standards and built on ground that isn't going to move or leave. Also, we need to get some food collection and pre-processing capacity on the west side, and again, expand some of the recycling and recovery opportunities out there, notwithstanding that Far West has a public recycling depot. On the west side, we have a little bit of a different situation. We actually have two sites that we've identified as potential sites. We have one in Cornelius, which is in the industrial zone. We have actually agreed to a PSA, purchase and
sale agreement,
and put some money down to hold the site so that we can evaluate the site, do due diligence, do an environmental assessment, determine the traffic impact and what is needed in order for that site to potentially house a solid waste facility. We also think this would be a good backstop for the Forest Grove transfer station out in that part of the region. We have a second site, and this one is owned by City of Hillsborough Parks, and it's about a 12-acre site, and it is on Mentor Bridge Road, directly to the north of the Hillsborough landfill. So that's what's pictured in this picture. That's the landfill itself. Sorry, I'm not. You're in a really bad location.
I looked at the light. That was the problem. It was my fault.
But we have some, I think, opportunities to partner with, in both cases, City of Hillsborough, Forest Grove, in the case of this site with City of Hillsborough and waste management. I think one of the opportunities is it's so close to a dry waste landfill that we could design the site such that we could dispose of the dry waste there rather than cart it all the way out to Columbia Ridge, which dry waste makes up about 35% to 40% of the total waste stream that we collect. So Dan is going to walk through the scenarios, and just like we did with the south side, walk through the scenarios, and then we'll ask you some questions about these.
Thanks, Roy. So, yeah, similar setup to how we set up the south scenarios. We have three scenarios for your consideration. First, we would take advantage of the opportunity to develop two parcels in the west part of the region to advance the goals and objectives of the regional waste plan. That would be one facility in Cornelius and one in Hillsborough, which Roy just showed you. The second and third options are basically to do one project on one of the two properties that we are investigating and pass up on the other site. In the next slide, I'll run through opportunities and challenges with each of those three scenarios. This should look a little familiar. Scenario one, we would build two new facilities on the west side, one in Cornelius and one in Hillsborough. Again, planning estimated costs here would be between $120 and $200 million. Some of the opportunities here is that we could strategically locate services based on community needs and future growth. We could also take advantage of local government support in Cornelius for that site and Hillsborough support for their site. We could also take advantage of multiple opportunities around public-private partnerships and also public-public partnerships with this pair of properties. So we have a lot of design flexibility in terms of how we allocate services if we develop both. The challenge side of scenario one, building on both locations would be the highest cost option and would require two separate but coordinated engagement, design, and construction planning processes. With two new locations, there would be higher staffing, management, and operational costs than on a single site, similar to what we were talking about with South. It would also take longer to build out two properties than one, especially given the different characteristics of the two sites, in that one, the Cornelia site, is shovel-ready with potential for a fast-track to permit approval, while the other would require some rezoning, land use approval, and is generally a little more complicated to plan for. Scenario two is to build a full-service station at the Cornelia site only. This could cost between $60 and $100 million. On the plus side, this property is shovel-ready. I mentioned that. Metro has it already under contract, and so it is off the market while we continue to do due diligence and community engagement work to make sure that this site is a good fit for that community. We have support of the local government staff and the mayor of Cornelius, who see a publicly owned and operated full-service transfer station facility as a benefit to their community. And the site is well positioned for future growth to the farther west part of the region. Not listed here, but this particular property also provides an opportunity to link together two currently distinct, I'm just going to flash back to it, two currently distinct industrial districts, the districts of Forest Grove and Cornelius. You can't drive just between the two of them. You have to actually drop out of it and then drive back in. Challenges with the Cornelius site are minimal. It is relatively farther west in the region, and it also has a small portion of the property that is listed as wetland and would require some wetland mitigation, and we have identified a potential solution for that already. Scenario three is to build a facility on the Hillsborough site, which similarly would cost between $60 and $100 million. Again, these are estimates. While this property is zoned residential and staff were previously told that it was destined to become a park and was not available for our consideration, recent conversations with the city of Hillsborough has indicated that this property could be an opportunity for us to further explore. On the opportunity side, there are solid opportunities for public-public partnerships between Hillsborough and Metro with this parcel. And there are opportunities for private partnerships with waste management since it has facilities next door. This property could include a trailhead to link to future parks and trail systems or other amenities that support the adjacent residential neighborhood. And finally, it sits adjacent a dry waste landfill, which would likely translate to less costly dry waste disposal opportunity for that part of the region. For challenges, this site may require a longer planning process. There are also adjacent residential properties on the north boundary of the property line, and there are residential neighborhoods both to the north and east of the property, including an elementary school and a high school. I think you can make the argument that that's both a challenge and an opportunity. There are some concerns with traffic impacts on Minter Bridge Road, and finally, there's a need for further exploration of what Hillsborough envisions for this site in the near and long-term future.
So again, let me stop there, see if you have any questions about the scenarios before we get into the recommendation.
Yep, I think we're ready for recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just sorry. I'm trying to remember from my looking through the materials which services are each of these providing in this, in terms of South Hall, Hazard Ways?
Undetermined yet.
So each would be...
That's a great question, Councillor Chase. So at this stage, we have discussed with Cornelius a full-service transfer station with that also has public-facing attributes. So it would haul commercial, self-haul, yard debris, food waste, recycling drop-off, HHW, all the services that you see currently at Metro Central, but also new additional services as outlined in the regional waste plan. If we were to have two sites, we would have an opportunity to say what what services should be at both? What services make the most sense to have only at one versus at another? That would be a conversation that we would have with you, with local government officials, and especially with the community about what does the community want in those spaces and adjacent their neighborhoods and in close proximity to their elementary school or their industrial zone.
So can I just, so if we were, so I'm trying to just understand a little bit better. If we were to say Hillsborough's site, as an example, just because it's a little bit closer, could be a full-stop shop, then why would we, and we can build that and do that for $60 to $100 million, why, I'm just trying to understand, why would we consider another site and where we have South, for example, if we can do it all in one stop, or Central, why double the investment there if we can do it all in Hillsborough?
Do you want to take that one?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'll follow up.
So I started in this job a year ago, and we were asked to look at properties on the west side, and we considered all the available suitable industrial properties. And we use a base and functional criteria rating list to look at all those properties. We X'd out a lot of the properties to the northern part of Hillsborough because they were destined for data farms and high-tech electronics. And we also X'd out a bunch of properties near the airport because we can't site a facility within the proximity of the airport. So that really pushed us to the southern part of the region. And when you look for available industrial lands that are near shovel-ready, one property really rose to the very top, and that is the Cornelia site. We engaged with the city of Hillsborough a number of times about that particular property, Minter Bridge, and we're told that's going to be a park. So relatively recently, the scenario kind of changed to the point where we have an opportunity to further explore that. Given that it's zoned residential and that it was destined to be a park, we have looked at it and thought it's probably going to take us a little bit longer to get there, but it's a good opportunity, especially with its proximity to waste management and the landfill. And with the uncertainty about the future of Forest Grove Transfer Station, put all those pieces together, and we think it's a good opportunity, especially with population growth in that area. But we also think the Cornelia site is really well suited. It's on a transportation corridor. It's shovel ready. City of Cornelius has said we can move through the permitting process fairly quickly. There's a lot of good reasons to snap that property up. There's intense competition for industrial lands throughout the region. And so that's why we're here today, is to really ask you the question, does it make sense to have two? Does it make sense to put all our eggs in one basket? That's why we're here.
And I think there's probably other, as I recall, there were other benefits to having the two sites that are not just about efficiency, but it's about being able to serve a wide variety of customers. Mm-hmm. Councillor Gonzalez, do you want to?
Absolutely. Well, thank you. So I think I know these parts of the region pretty well. I appreciate the presentation. I think from my time out in community, both in Hillsborough, Cornelius, and Forest Grove, I say that there's very strong support for a public transfer station site and the services and the amenities and the benefits that come with it. And even more so when we craft a vision for the kind of site that we would like to build and the impacts of that. I was a little surprised to see the two site recommendation. I don't know why. It just feels like a lot of resources. It would come down to me to understand exactly the depth of investment there. For me, I'd like to think about, one, trying to be as responsible as we can with obviously the resources that are at our disposal, but also recognizing that the Cornelius and Hillsborough site, I mean, although in a map they might look pretty far, but they're relatively close to each other, less than a 10-minute drive. I would like to work with you and work with council to identify the site that I think would make the biggest impact for that community that we specifically look at. And if we can create big impact for both, then I guess that could be an option too. But I just from the conversations that we've had, the schematics, the plans, everything, all of the momentum, for me, the Cornelia site has just risen in terms of potential.
May I move to the recommendation and then
yes,
the phasing, and
yeah.
maybe we could talk
yeah.
about it after. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
So our recommendation, we recommend securing and further evaluating both sites, to your point, Councillor Gonzalez, because of the many opportunities that these two sites could bring to the western part of the metro region. Two properties would address a number of needs, including growing population, growing commercial sectors, lack of available and suitable industrial lands in Washington County, need for equitable access to public services, need to compact loads to move waste further away for disposal. And there are opportunities, there are expanding partnership opportunities with waste management, with Washington County, with the local governments. And then providing a vehicle, really, and I see these buildings, these sites, as an opportunity or a vehicle to address the many goals and visions of the regional waste plan. And that's what really makes me excited about working on these projects. So we're basically saying let's continue down the path. We've already secured one. Let's negotiate and talk with Hillsborough about opportunities for the second site in Hillsborough. We intend to hire an engineering firm to design a flexible facility template that we would bring back to you that would accommodate a mixture of different services, and then, of course, work closely with you and the elected officials and the local governments and community groups, community-based organizations, those who haven't been at the table before, I'll say that again, to think about which services make sense where and what sequence to build that out.
I think we're all fully supportive of that continued process. If I'm, because I'm not seeing any consternation.
No, I just think it's been a long time coming for the West Side, and I think the West Side would agree. And it's really great that we're at this level of contemplating investment in one or even two sites for a part of the region that I think feels like it's a good time to get a public transfer station. So I'm glad that we're heading in that direction.
I think the opportunity for getting both sites is for growth, for future growth, accommodating a whole bunch of needs that we've had in terms of the resiliency and where we locate some of our equipment that needs to be relocated
right.
out of the oil fields. So I like the idea of keeping both of them moving and secure both sites, and I think that both communities are willing to at least have a conversation about what is on those sites. I don't think they're tied to anything, and I think that's the beauty of it, is they're both interested, but I don't think that either one have come down on, we must have this or that, and I think that's a good place to be so that we can be as flexible in the future as we can, because industrial land will only become more scarce. Councilor Lewis.
Yeah, so to chime in, I think continuing down the path of looking at both sites, knowing that we're on our toes and we could pivot one way or the other or continue with both, just depending on what both pencils and also what we can dream in collaboration with the community. And some of the work that has been guiding this in terms of, like, looking at what some of the Washington State facilities look like and what the best practices are, I can, like, really envision that happening here, particularly with the dry waste landfill so close, either adjacent or next-door neighbor. But I would love to learn a little bit more about how we can get that kind of full circle thing going right at community scale. That's a really exciting opportunity.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Any last words?
Well, I would say, I just would, based on the two sites, yes, let's look at both sites. I think that's a great, and I think it's nice to be able to have some options like that as opposed to what we were talking about earlier where we still need to go out and look. I would say, I'm supportive of a site. If it's two sites that are doing the same thing or require, doubling our investment, I still am not quite getting the value we would get out of that, and so I would want to see a lot more around why two full service sites. And then the other is just, I think, reflecting back on that South conversation, and we're looking, we never know, it's very difficult to find sites. I would welcome if there were other sites that we identified. I know we're quite a ways down the road here, but who knows whether some other great site comes up, because I do think these still feel pretty distant. Mm-hmm. And I look at, you know, the area of the Washington County and the West Side, and I think, oh, a lot of these are still closer to Central than they are to some of these. I don't know how you factor in the traffic there, but, you know, there could be something that pops up that's a lot more accessible as well, and so I wouldn't want to miss an opportunity like that.
Got it. Thank you.
Councillor Craddock, and then we're going to close this portion and go to
well,
next steps.
I agree with Councillor Chase that I'm questioning why we need the two sites, but I think with your comments and I'm fully understanding that obviously there's an opportunity here. We shouldn't oppose that at this point. We should move forward and look at the two sites, but I do wonder, in the long run, are both sites necessary?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think, it's going to come down to the suite of services that we offer at one. At least the way I've been thinking about it, one might be more of a wholesale site and the other one might be more of a retail site, if you think about solid waste in those terms. So one might be more commercially focused, the other might be more publicly focused, but they might have attributes of both. So I know food and processing food and getting food into a wastewater facility for digestion is going to be an important consideration here too. The other thing, and President Peterson mentioned the resilience piece, it's going to be important to have more of these sites around the region that will be able to, even during a winter storm, be able to take on the extra material that gets created that's outside the normal scope of the solid waste system. But in the case of an earthquake, even more material needs to be staged and processed, and it would be great for us to have more options like that.
And this is abuts a wetland there. What's the large wetland to the west of that?
Which one, Cornelius or Hillsborough?
Mentor Bridge.
Mentor Bridge, that's Clean Water Services. That's Jackson Bottom Wetland.
Jackson Bottom.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what that big facility is.
And that is the one area we talked about, the possibility of maybe building a trail from the residential neighborhood to the east over to Jackson Bottom.
All right, next steps.
So, we're yep.
We'll skip the rest.
Nope, yep, moving on.
Yeah, next steps, just real quickly. Most of these we've mentioned. We're going to finalize the HDR report on the commercial versus self-haul at Metro South. We're going to continue to work with local governments, local government elected officials, and needing your help to do that in many cases, as well as the staff. We're meeting with staff. We do have a meeting with Cornelius City Council in early November. We're meeting with Washington County Board of Commissioners in October 22nd, I believe, and we have another meeting set with the Hillsborough folks, too. So we're having these continuing conversations, and feel free to let us know how you want to be or if you want to be more involved in those. We're happy to get that kind of involvement. We're working on forming community advisory group to the south part of the region, which would look at, as we try to identify properties, what communities want us to be thinking about. We're going to be working with community-based organizations in both areas, especially as we identify properties, to get them engaged with helping us engage the community. As we get to critical decision points, we're going to be bringing that back to council, so you can expect to hear more about this, hopefully not take up this much time, but we do appreciate your allowing us to do this. We do have several more work sessions coming up yet this year. So we have one on food waste on the 29th. We've got one on rate transparency, which was going to be on the 19th, and it's now going to be on another date, but I don't know what that date is yet. And we're coming back to talk about public-private partnerships and recycling on December 3rd as a follow-up to our last conversation about that. So a lot going on in solid waste.
Yes, thank you. I just want to say thank you for this in-depth kind of walking us through the costs and benefits. While there were still questions, it focused the conversation allowed for that weighing of cost and benefits to play out. So I appreciate the work that went into this to get us this far.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, Councilor Gonzalez has a quick question.
So I see that we have a lot of people from the solid waste industry here, just from all sectors, which is great. Thank you for being here. For the next steps, I think what would be really helpful for me and counselors would be, once we do begin that public engagement, begin to have those forums or community advisory groups, opportunities to hear from community, business, public sector leaders in this space, it'd be really helpful because we are talking about massive investments and massive policy decisions, and I want to make sure we get as much input as we can, and that we can be a part of that and just listen and be present.
No, I appreciate that. Also, we're kicking off the Regional Waste Advisory Committee on October 31st.
Spooky.
And so that'll be another another point of access to this whole conversation.
Thank you.
And that's actually something I was going to follow up, so I'm just going to put an exclamation point on that, and that is getting a round robin of input from the industry and how this changes benefits and costs to them as well. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next on the agenda is our Regional Investment Strategies update. Bye, everybody. It was nice having you here. See you again soon. I know. I'm sorry.
Okay, your audience is bigger than my audience.
Okay. Andy, do you need me to get some more staff in here?
Would you mind? We do a fan announcement.
We'll do an all call.
All staff.
Don't we have an entire planning department to come sit in for you?
The most important audience is right here for you, Andy.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate you.
And this is brief. This is one of our Andy Shaw, Government Affairs Director, is one of our.
Really?
Regular regional investment strategy updates. So it's a little wide-ranging, but not that deep today, although there's a lot going on, as I think you all know. So briefly on housing, you will have two items before you this Thursday. One item is on the consent agenda, which is minor work plan amendments, and the other agenda is on the regular. The other items on the regular agenda, which is a formal approval of Metro's implementation strategy. That's the portion on the 10% of the resources and how we implement that land piece that was 10% of the measure. Pause for a question.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Have we had a briefing on that? Am I like asleep at the wheel?
I believe there has been a briefing. But if you desire more information, my notes say connect with Emily Lieb, and they're happy to give you more information ahead of that.
Yeah. Great.
The land acquisition strategy. Can you remind me what the work plan is, Andy?
This is the overall work plan for how we implement the housing bond measure, which you gave direction on earlier, and I think there's some tweaks to that. I don't have the details on that. And again, if you need more information, Emily Lieb is at your disposal to provide an update on that prior to Thursday.
Thanks.
So there's been no council work session on this for a briefing, correct? I'm just clarifying.
I thought there had been briefings on the implementation plan.
No.
But you're saying no. Okay.
No,
we will communicate back to Emily that let's get some briefings post haste.
So it's on the agenda for this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Do you... I did send an email to all of the counselors 2 weeks ago.
That's what I remember.
I did.
But,
so
I was just trying to clarify.
A heads up, and it's in Granicus, but you're probably correct. There has not been any briefings, as that I know. So we can do those. I just want to let you know that, you know, it shouldn't be totally out of the blue that it's coming this Thursday. If you're uncomfortable with it coming this Thursday, we can always pull it if you need more time to consider it. Otherwise, we'll... set Emily in motion and make sure you have all the background and briefing that you need.
Let's just go back sure and make well let's all look at the email. Mm-hmm. And if there's any red flags, mm-hmm. Then let me know and we can work to figure out what next steps are. But we're going to have a full presentation.
You're going to have a presentation from Emily.
And if there's any red flags that we need to deal with,
correct.
Then we can. So I think we should just move forward and keep it on the agenda with the realization that we might need a follow-up.
Correct.
Okay.
We are not, yes, correct. We'll leave it there.
Okay.
Thanks. So, on parks, obviously the Parks Nature Bond measure is now before the voters. I actually got my ballot pamphlet just the other day at home. So, John Blasher sent you, and you may not have seen this morning, a memo that just outlines the staff's approach to beginning the scoping process around implementation. So that it's sort of the pre-work plan scoping process. I think they mainly want to make sure you all know the steps they're taking to prepare, if the measure is to pass, to be ready to launch the process of engagement, discussion with you, and, of course, the significant amount of refinement of the various buckets that we've planned for if the measure is to pass. So that measure, that memo is in your inbox. Secondly, I think you know this Thursday here, we will have a TSCC hearing as required on any kind of property tax proposal before the voters. And I believe questions and answers to the questions that have been given to us have been prepared. Staff will be there as well as you to participate in that. Also, we worked with the Secretary of State, staff in Parks, and OMA worked with the Secretary of State to get approval, the sort of safe harbor for a mailer that we can. We'll get you a copy of this via email, but it's been approved by Secretary of State via the safe harbor process to go out to voters. We intend to mail to all voters in the region shortly, get that out so people have information and can access more information about the neutral facts about the bond measure. Just want to make sure you knew we'd gone through that process and successfully navigated a couple tricky issues. One in particular around racial equity and how we talk about racial equity. I think it was a very good education session or two with Secretary of State's office. I don't know if you want to provide any more.
No, I would actually thank staff for going down. I think this is, as part of Metro's racial equity strategy, we're actually educating some other government agencies about racial equity. And, you know, it sounded, I wasn't there, but it sounded like the conversation, I mean, we really were bringing some relatively new issues to these staff, and I think that's an effective use of our time, if we can successfully do that. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Interesting.
Thank All you right.
Yes. Is there any, just out of side note, is there any reason to follow up with them after the election and follow up, like, on a brown, on a lunch and learn session with them about the things that we're trying to achieve here and the different types of tools we're implementing?
I don't know. I think we could explore that. I think the challenge was they had just not been exposed to the fact that we had a racial equity strategy and what that meant. And
yeah.
So they're looking, they get concerned about words or terms they feel like are leading or
right. And
promoting.
And I'm saying away from the elections,
yeah.
It might be worth a conversation with the Secretary of State's office or even the AG's office about
it certainly
opportunities
couldn't hurt.
For what the region is working on mm-hmm. so that they understand.
It won't be the last time. Mm-hmm. We talk about. It won't be the last time that we talk about racial equity.
Right, but if we at least start the conversation so that when we call them and say we need some advice on this, they've got a better understanding.
Yeah, I think that can be helpful, and we've actually talked about that more collaborative approach because we were frustrated earlier in this process with some of the responses, and I think we made some progress in this meeting. I think absolutely continuing that will be good. Because to be really blunt, they were striking things about racial equity, saying this is, you know, too leading, right? It's too political, even though it's actually what we're doing. I mean, it's in the title.
They were comfortable with terms like people with disabilities
right.
because that's something they're familiar with. But when we talked about race and racial equity, they felt like that was somehow a promotion language. So it's there's some work to do to get across, no, this is a body of work. It's policy we've established. It's work that's embedded in all the aspects of this measure, of the housing measure, of our transportation work. And so I think familiarizing them with that more deeply on an ongoing basis will only help us, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think this mailer, we were successful in getting to a good place.
Yep.
I mean, we probably would have gone a little further, but where we got was a good
place. Well, we have other partners down there that we could definitely invite. I mean, it wouldn't just have to be the Secretary of State or the AG's office, right? I mean, between DLCD and ODOT, maybe there's a fuller conversation that we could promote.
I missed, when is this going out? I missed that part.
I don't actually have the date of exactly when the mailer is going out. Scotty, do you know?
I heard today, maybe end of this
year. Soon. It sounds like very soon.
That's okay.
Yes. Ends up being about 400,000 pieces of mail when you think about, you only mail one piece to a household that has voters in it. You don't mail to every single voter. So, because we don't want to spend more money than we need to spend, but we want to make sure that we're letting, this is one of the most important moments that we engage with our, with your constituents in the region. We try to get them here for hearings, try to get them to open houses, but actually asking them to vote on something, yay or nay, is a really important moment. So.
Can you tell me more about the memo that John Blasher sent out this morning? I don't think I saw it in my inbox. I might have just hit it and then moved on.
So the staff here at Metro are developing, are sort of scoping out what is the body of work to look at the promised refinements around the areas that we might want to purchase. If we can do target area refinement, refinement around... scoping out the engagement that we want to do in the follow-up to the bond measure passing, and then also identifying the needed resources within the department to implement the bond measure. So the main thing that I want to let you know is they're doing anticipatory work now to get ahead of the potential passage of the measure and be ready to move ahead with the work, which would, of course, involve coming back to engage you in the discussion about a work plan for them, but they want to be ready for that conversation if the voters choose to pass the measure.
Okay.
It's that weird window where, you know, we're supposed to go sort of radio silent, but there's work we can do and what we should do, and they're letting you know we're doing that work.
Okay.
Quietly and neutrally. So, next item, moving to transportation. We've talked for some time at these updates about building a community partnership funding opportunity, and we're really pleased to announce we went through a brief and somewhat co-created process with community organizations to award funding and have chosen these four organizations after this competitive process to receive funding. There's $200,000 that are divided amongst these four organizations. These are intended to be capacity-building civic engagement grants around the development of the transportation measure. And some of the key decisions that are coming ahead of us. In particular, things that we heard early on in the year in engagement with many of these organizations were the areas they really wanted to be involved in influencing the decision. So in particular, the program areas, we heard a lot of interest in specific program areas. We're now going to be engaging more through the fall and into the winter. What are the narrowed set of programs look like? How do we scope them out, decide how much money we should be putting in each area to achieve what targets using what criteria? So they want to be engaged, folks want to be engaged in those discussions. The revenue mechanisms and the impacts of those revenue mechanisms on community was also of great interest to a number of our partners. And so they'll be involved in getting folks together and helping influence and help inform the decision-making process about the right revenue mechanisms to put in place. And then thirdly, and later in the process, the mechanisms for accountability and oversight that we include in the measure and ensuring that their voices are a part of that process. So we're yes.
I love that strategy. I think it's just great to have that kind of engagement. And I'm just wondering, how was the application process in terms of number of folks how competitive was it?
What did we have? Six applicants total. We invited a set. We were using a relatively newly discovered, is that an appropriate term to say, or newly created process where with nonprofit organizations we can invite folks to participate. It's not as big and formal as the RFP process. Mm-hmm. So we invited folks in to learn more about the opportunity, discuss what it could be about, help influence what we might. How we might craft the application process, put a dinner together, and talk through that with Craig. How many people do we think had at that dinner? Maybe 12 different organizations. So six chose to apply. Two of the applications didn't really provide as much detail about what they wanted to accomplish, and also with $200,000, we only had so much financial area to cover. These four had the strongest applications and the clearest proposals about what they hope to do. Under this special procurement process, we now go through a co-creation process where we work with the organizations to more fully define the scope of work and the contract after selecting them. I think these organizations also had a little bit stronger past civic engagement experience, and that was part of the scoring process, was looking at what kinds of things have you been engaged, what do you have experience doing in terms of organizing community, bringing people together, bringing voices to decision-making processes, that kind of thing.
That is a fairly promising practice that I'm seeing emerging, and I think is a great direction. It'd be interesting to see what we learn along the way about how that works, and it's different, that's innovative, that's building a partnership, and there's a lot of really great things there. So I'm excited to see that happening, and I think it'd be interesting to just learn about that as we go.
So, and this is a partnership between government affairs and planning and DEI, and we tried to establish it in a way that we could learn lessons about the broader effort to build more of a civic engagement muscle at Metro. And so it is going to end before at the point of referral, because we don't want there to be any whiff of us spending money on supporting organizations that might choose to turn around and do something different after referral and run into any legal challenges there. But we do hope to learn lessons along the way about what would a longer-term, broader civic engagement program potentially look like.
Councilor Craddock and then Councilor Lewis.
I noticed these organizations have somewhat of a geographic base, and I just, will they be able to represent the region? Even though they're representing particular groups of people, there's also a regional perspective we need to consider. So how are we working around that?
We explicitly asked organizations to talk to us about what they would do to reach areas that have not had great representation by people of color in particular. So one of Verde's concepts is to hire someone who can actually do more work in Washington County, down into Tigard and that area, try to build more capacity for community in those geographic places. Unite Oregon's proposal is pretty regionally focused, and Apano as well is looking at doing work in Clackamas in particular, and in parts of Washington County.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So that was a key component of, especially if you have a base in a place where there's already a pretty good structure for communicating with government. What can you do to grow your capacity and actually increase the strength of voices in other places to represent community?
I had the same question. I assume your answer to me is the same.
I could do it differently if you want me to. I could rephrase it slightly.
Two questions. Is it structured in a way, the community partnerships, are they structured in a way where the funds are split up four ways, or is there like a regional organization that's the hub and then there's collaboration? You know what I'm saying? There's like the master and then there's the subcom.
We are awarding money to each organization, but we had a luncheon actually with the four representatives of the four organizations, and already began the discussion of how would you like to work together? Would you like to work together? How would you like to work with us? So there's already discussions of how to collaborate, but they've each been given a specific sum of money, and it varies depending on what they propose to do.
Great. Well, I think the fact that you asked all of those questions is very helpful in terms of not forcing certain partnerships where
correct.
It doesn't make sense. Second, from the lessons that we learned from the similar kind of program we put together for affordable housing, were we able to implement the lessons learned there? Because I think that folks in Washington County and maybe Clackamas County, I don't know, I don't want to speak for Clackamas County, felt like the way that we deployed that strategy wasn't as effective, as was anticipated. So how did we implement lessons learned, if at all?
I think that one of the most important lessons we learned from that was we really can't use the money beyond the date of referral. And that came to us late in the game. And so the amount that we basically gave the money for 4 months of time. And the biggest lesson was that was too short a time to really help them build capacity. Okay. Here we're looking at more like 7 or 8 months, which is frankly not as much time as we had hoped, but it's better. And we continue to hear clearly a longer-term strategy with organizations where they can sort of, here if you hire a new staff person, they barely make it to what we would call the probationary period at Metro. So they're interested in being able to provide a longer-term capacity and develop leaders who can continue to provide that kind of work over time. So that's a lesson we are learning along the way, as we work towards understanding what a more broad civic engagement program would look like.
And in terms of the strategies that we look to deploy through these community partnerships, are they going to be more like longitudinal in so far as, you know, like just different cross-section looks, like, you know, put together as focus group, different people for focus group, different people focus group? Or do we imagine a much deeper kind of dive with like the cohort model, and you foster a group of people to learn more and more, a blend of both, different strategies that have been proposed? I might be going way too deep in here. I just want to see.
No, I'm looking over at Craig because I'm trying to remember the specifics that they each proposed slightly different body of work, and we didn't ask them to give us a scope of work because under the special procurement rules, we're supposed to go co-create that scope of work more fully. So we're in the midst of doing that right now. But I would say we got differing approaches from different groups. I mean, Verde, frankly, is looking to increase its presence in the west side. Epano, much more in Clackamas County, a little bit more in the west side. So for them, it's more about growing their presence and growing their connection to community in those areas, and therefore their ability to bring voices to government and to decision makers in those locations. With PALF, Portland African American Leadership Forum, it's more about growing capacity and actually trying to connect African American voices to transit, which has been they have found is lacking, and their role in transportation and transit hasn't been as strong because of their lack of capacity. And this gives them capacity to engage with African American transit riders. So just as a flavor, we can certainly bring more information back as those scopes get.
That was enough for me.
Great.
Councilor Craddock, did you have a last question? I saw you.
No, I already asked it.
Okay. All right. No, I know you did. I thought I saw you raise your hand again.
Okay, so more transportation. Highlights only. A lot going on coming up. We have a task force meeting tomorrow night, and that is largely going to be a Kittleson staff presenting on the elements of the project recommendations that the task force will see. So the last task force meeting, we had the local investment team, some local investment team members talk about the summer's work on and their evaluation of projects in the various corridors. This is now looking at more of the engineering side, the technical side of what's going to come to them around the project recommendations and sort of preparing them for how to look at the information they're going to get next. And what they're going to get next will be Friday of this week, where we meet with the co-chairs on Thursday just to triple check the evolving staff recommendations, and they will go out to the task force on Friday. We're not intending Friday to be a broad broadcast to the world. Next Wednesday, we're going to do a briefing of press, as we have been at various points along the way, and then it will be made public on the 25th when we send it out as part of the packet for the task force meeting on the 30th. So we're stepping into the more robust discussion about the actual projects. The meat of the task force's discussion is intended to be on the 30th, and then we're hoping to bring them to a place where they can make a recommendation on the 20th of November.
So I think what we've asked is for a conversation about when there's a staff recommendation and hearings and the Metro Council recommendation.
So, yes.
So that it's not, just FYI, so it's not so tightly packed and there's more opportunity to have conversations with our stakeholders.
So we plan to come to you, I think it's in early November, after the major task force discussion, and Margie and I will be before you then. We're working to schedule some sort of evening hearing, public hearing. November 18th is the work session.
And what I'm telling you is we're going to ask you to have a conversation about not having that all done by December 10th, expanding that out. Because right now it's too tight to actually look like we're actually have time to hear for folks to be able to prepare responses, get organized, come before us, actually have a hearing where it's a real hearing, and then follow up on it appropriately. That's too tight. So just from we just got to figure out a little bit more room in the schedule.
And you're speaking to the council's time frame, not the task force.
The public hearing and then the council project direction.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Take it into January.
It may. I think we need to sit down and figure out a timeline that works. It may be that it does come into the first or second week of January. And I know that that then compresses whatever work staff is doing to get us to May. But I think if it's that tightly packed, it looks and feels baked. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that we need to make sure that we're not sending messages out like that just because of the timeline. And I totally understand why we're compressed and the hope for the perfect, but I think we need to allow for more time.
So we are trying to move in the December task force, which I think off the top of my head is the 20th or so. We're trying to move at that task force to start the revenue discussion. So our plan had been we would have a pretty good sense of the set of projects and the scope of cost. So we can still begin the conversation with them about revenue sources.
Yes, and I think you'd have enough information that things would be, you know, they'll probably be tweaked between a staff recommendation and the council proposal, but it would be around the edges.
Right, and we've always anticipated there'd be further discussions as we move along, and the realities of funding limitations come into play that we'd have iterations through March, April, and into May as well. But I think I'm hearing you say you really want to make sure that we're hearing from all of our partners and giving them the time to actually prepare and
well
come
thought
talk
out,
to you.
Not reactionary.
Yep. Okay.
Because I think if they can start to prepare and then check in with you about their worries and concerns, mm-hmm. at least by the time they get to the hearing, there's some things that have
it's
been discussed.
It's not a day later from those discussions.
Yes.
Yes.
So.
Come on up.
Another consideration on timing and the schedule, unfortunately, is not flexible, is the vote on RFA and just the interplay between these two, the regional flex funds. JPAC takes their final vote on December 19th, and then when you come back in January, more or less have to, I'm not sure if it's out, we've got the 2020 calendar, but SARA is aware that we need kind of the first spot on the January calendar for Metro Council to make a final decision.
Okay, well, so we can chew gum and walk.
Great. I just want to make you aware.
Thank you.
And not schedule them on the same day.
But I can chew gum and walk.
Okay. Between us.
But we can figure this out.
Okay. Yeah.
On the same topic, if we can move on from that, we had a poll out in the field that we talked to you about, and we'll be briefing you on those poll results next Tuesday. Also be briefing a broader set of partners Tuesday afternoon. Some very interesting results on sort of how do we talk about transit and corridors and moving people through. How does that relate to people's concerns about traffic, about climate change, other issues? We tested some key sort of forced choice things. You want to be purist and solve climate? Do you want to have a balanced package and advance climate? Very strong results on the latter, which is good news for us. But we'll have a lot more news with Dave Metz here to brief you next Tuesday on that. We do plan another round of polling right on the back, on the heels of that, separately to look at revenue mechanisms. We did these separately because you only have so much time on a survey, and we wanted to really have a robust understanding of people's beliefs and feelings about how to move people through corridors, how to deal with traffic, how to deal with climate, and separately an array of somewhat more complicated revenue mechanisms and their willingness to pay those, how they see those connecting to transportation. So that we'll be briefing you on towards the end of the year after we run it through. We also are engaged with Echo Northwest right now. They are scoping even further from the work we had done earlier in the year what we think these different mechanisms would raise. So we can bring that to the task force starting in December. We are also planning a programs summit in the January timeframe to bring folks together to talk about how to flesh out the programs that you gave us direction on, bring some smart folks in, bring some speakers in, bring folks that really want to advocate around a particular area and kind of have a day-long set of workshops and almost like a conference to allow folks to really get engaged in the programs at a deeper level.
Go ahead.
When you say summit, do you mean like similar to the summits that we're having next week or 2 weeks? Where Or would it be more of a like convention center kind of hub? Most people come in.
I think the latter. The summit concept is more like get folks together. This is the set of separate county by county meetings that we're doing next week throughout the region. The summit concept is more like get lots of folks together, give them a chance to maybe go to two or three different work groups if they chose to and be involved in a few different program concepts. I think you all know, and we're very excited to be co-producing these three events in Washington County, Clackamas County, and Multnomah County. They're meant to be sort of built off the really successful Better Business Portland event that we had earlier in the year. Folks really left that event with a sense of excitement and engagement around transportation and possibilities in transportation. Each one will have a short panel of local folks talking about transportation. We're pulling from the local investment team. We're pulling from the task force and pulling from other local sources to put people on those panels. And then we'll have a social time, and like we did at Better Business Portland, boards around the room that with staff that people can engage in talking about the corridors, talking about some of the high-level concepts around projects and how they view the values that you have put forward, the task force has put forward as being beneficial as we think about investments in these different corridors. So pretty high-level, more around trying to get people engaged with the transportation, not a project open house, not even really a corridor open house. There will be, I'm told, excellent food and a no-host bar, so a different kind of event than like an open house in another way. We've also had great support from a variety of staff in the council office and other places to put these events on, and we're getting a lot of partnerships, lots of excitement from partners that are involved in this process, wanting to promote transportation and support the process of engaging folks around transportation funding.
Councilor Craddock.
So is it a closed group of people that are being invited, or is it just open to the public?
We've got postcards out. We are broadly inviting people to attend.
And so we possibly could post on social media
sites? Please do,
okay.
Yes.
The question I wonder about the Orchards at 82nd, is it large enough facility that you could really have a lot of people attend? And I was just wondering if those facilities are large enough to accommodate everybody.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'm looking back over here to see if we've scoped that out. 100 to 150, so.
100.
That'd be awesome if that many people showed up.
Yeah.
Thank you to all the staff that worked on it, especially Victor.
He's done a ton of work. He's brought a lot of partnership sponsorships in.
Yeah.
Arranged the no-host bars, yeah.
I think having the county forms is a awesome idea. Thank you. All right.
That's all I have.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Councilor, COO Communication.
Two quick items for today. Thank you. So October, as I think you all know, is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And we're going to be highlighting the enormous and often unrecognized contributions that people with disabilities make to the U.S. economy. Two things I wanted to note. Metro will be hosting the third annual Peer-to-Peer Business Forum here at MRC on Tuesday, October 29th, 8 a.m. to noon. This is a business leadership forum regarding disability and inclusion initiatives in the workplace, and there's going to be panel presenters, breakout sessions with Kaiser, Permanente, OHSU, Microsoft, and more, so that'll be exciting. And then a National Disability Employment Awareness Month panel on Thursday the 31st, also spooky, from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. up at the Oregon Zoo Conservation Hall. And you can learn what Metro is doing to be an employer of choice for people with disabilities, and we're going to have people from the disability community and advocates representing regional service organizations to help educate staff about the community and share their experiences, and as usual, there will be light snacks. Second, I just wanted to follow up on a point that Councilor Craddock made a couple meetings ago about zoo bond arbitrage payments, and there were some questions around the table, and I just wanted to follow up on that. So, and I'll try and keep this relatively high level, but if you want to dig in further, let me know. So when governments issue tax-exempt bonds, we issue those bonds in different tranches, and then we invest that fund because we don't send that money out the door right away. On a tax-exempt bond, we are not allowed to earn more interest than what we are paying for the bond. And that's just an IRS rule. It's tax exempt. There are some additional rules. Taxable bonds, you can keep that interest, but on tax exempt bonds, you cannot. Some of the Zubon money, we actually were able to borrow at incredibly low interest rates of under 1%. We turn around and we invest that very safely in investments, and we earn more. We've actually known about this through the entire process, planned for it as well. What the IRS says is if you do earn more, you have to rebate that back to the IRS. But, of course, we're paying for that with our additional interest that we're earning. So in the end, the arbitrage penalty that we have to pay back is estimated right now to be about $624,000. But we have also earned, in sort of projected interest earnings this year, about $650,000. And so we'll be using that to pay the arbitrage back. And it was never budgeted in any project, so we won't need to make any reductions in zoo projects. And the Bond Oversight Committee has been aware of it as well. So it is an important thing to note from a financial perspective, but it was planned and somewhat normal.
I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So if it's possible in the arbitrage structure to pay off the interest rate that we owe to the lender with the money that we get on the market through that investment, or is that what I'm missing?
Yeah, so that's actually what the goal when we hold those funds is, to be making enough interest when we're holding it to pay it back. Now, it doesn't always work out that way. For instance, if we issue bonds at 3.5%, it's somewhat hard to find 3.5% safe investments now, but not impossible. So often you're earning a little bit less than what you're paying, but sometimes you're earning a little bit more, and we just keep track of it, and to the extent we earn more, we have to pay it back. We can't profit from those. Taxable bonds, on the other hand, we can.
Yeah.
And so the housing bonds, the affordable housing bonds, are taxable, so we will not have an arbitration penalty.
And that debt service interest rate is determined by who determines the interest rate?
When we issue the bonds, that's the promise we make. We will pay you X amount of interest rate, and then our investments vary. So this is getting back to the investment policy we talked about last week. It just depends on the market interest rate environment generally. But the interest rates have been rising over the last few years, which is why we're in this situation. Yep.
And while you may have sent out an email, would you like to make a public announcement about a recent hire?
Oh, yes. I thought I did that, but maybe not. So
no.
The chief financial officer.
Yes.
So we have hired Brian Kennedy.
I know. He left the room. We tried to get him back.
Yeah,
so
we can
at least give him a round of applause.
Yes, so Brian Kennedy has been offered and accepted the chief financial officer position. And so, as I said in the email, we actually had a very, very strong pool of candidates, both locally and nationally, which was pretty exciting. And I also think it's really exciting when an internal candidate just sort of knocks it out of the park. And at every stage along the way, with our internal smaller panels, our employment panels, some outside stakeholder engagement as well, it was pretty unanimous across the board that they thought he was the right candidate to move us forward. So one more director without interim before his or her name.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well,
thanks,
congratulations to Ryan. He's back working hard.
Yes.
So
yes.
Everybody send him an email and just say congrats. All right. So. Councillor Communications. Councillor Chase, Councillor Lewis.
Well, just wanted to share that the Here Together Advisory Committee met on Friday. And I attended, and they have developed a framework for service initiative that they will.
Is that it?
Well, I have a draft copy here. They're still working on it, and it is something that they are still developing. It is available for folks to look at, but they announced that they really are going to be approaching Metro to put this initiative forward. So that was sort of the first place I'd heard that they were really, I mean, we'd known they were kind of gearing
the
up.
The first public announcement.
Yes. So,
having not talked to us prior.
Yeah, I mean, we had had conversations with them, a number of things, but in terms of them coming to Metro, this is, you know, they've made a decision to sort of move that forward. And so, you know, we'll, I think, continue to hear from them what their ideas are. There is this draft, which folks are
let's get copies
welcome
around.
To get copies
let's
of that.
Copy,
I think they're going to
Thank you, sir.
Be working on finalizing it a little bit sooner, maybe as soon as this week. So I think that's something for us to, we will be able to process and discuss. So it's just a, more of a heads up if that is on its way.
And as a follow-up to that, we're going to have a meeting with staff to figure out what our response is if we are to get formally asked. And then we will come to you guys with that response.
And there's some other components in there. You know, they had some polling that was really quite encouraging in some ways, which was around a couple of, so regionally, it was a regional poll. One of the items on there was the gross receipts tax, which is not something that we have the authority to put forward regionally, but had incredibly strong support, not just amongst our sort of Democrat and independent population, but even in the Republican, stood up very well. And so I think, you know, one of my comments was, as we're evaluating options, like a regional option, let's also make sure not giving up some, maybe some really incredible opportunities like a statewide initiative that could actually capture gross receipts tax and probably triple the amount of funding that we could secure for services. So I know this is a very important issue for all of us, and the need for services is incredibly high and urgent and critical. And so, you know, that remains to me very important. So I think these conversations will be important, and evaluating what are all of the options that can be moved forward that might, you know, best, what's the best path forward, I think, is what we really need to be, we're going to need to dig in, I think, in fairly short order on that.
Yep. Good.
Paul was there. Do you think I covered that okay?
Yeah.
Councilor Lewis.
Sure, thank you. Last week, I had the opportunity to meet with Cy Adler, the Dean of the College of Urban Affairs at Portland State University, who is in an interim role at the helm of the Institute of Metropolitan Studies. Many of you know we have a relationship with IMS in terms of both direction and our role as regional data keepers and people with sharp pencils. They're going through kind of a real evaluation of IMS's role and structure, and just wanted everybody to know that I will be part of some sort of informational interview data collection activity within the next couple of weeks, just about what Metro is doing, what we're thinking, where we're going. I'm in theory supposed to be appointed to their board, but that's on hold while they're doing this kind of deep dive in existential thinking. So if you have thoughts or strong opinions, I'm all ears. Along the lines of having heard your unique opinions and individual voices regarding Expo, just wanted to report back that we had the first Expo study meeting also last week. Really good meeting. It became very clear about 10 minutes into the meeting that part of the meeting and takeaways needs to be an explicit statement of the problem. So that's the first deliverable that our consultant's going to help us get, so that we actually all have on a single page, or maybe two sides of a single page, what really the challenges are, because we hear various things from staff depending on what level of staff we're talking to. So I look forward to bringing that back and sharing it with you all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Councilor Gonzalez?
I think I could provide a quick debrief on MPAC, just because I don't think we followed up on who was supposed to do that, because we just shared the talking points that day. So we were able to have a panel of different industry experts around employment lands, industrial lands, and kind of the trends that we're seeing in the workforce. And so people stayed up until the end and have heard all ranges of feedback, but overall, I appreciate staff's work in putting together those high-level conversations around what we take into account for the 2040 refresh. And so we had Stephen Green. There was someone from a commercial real estate firm. I can't remember her name. The CEO of MISO, Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon, and then there was a chocolatier that has an office off of Broadway in 17th or 19th or so.
And did they bring anything? Did I miss?
No, they didn't bring
anything. They didn't bring any chocolate?
Bring anything, but anything, yeah.
So maybe we could all take a field trip in a non-quorum-sized pod.
Okay.
Or it could be a study tour.
I like that.
Which I get their explicit exemptions for.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I will just say thank you for allowing me to go off on the best practices trip for 2 weeks. I actually visited with three separate delegations that were in, and Christine, Council
Lewis,
was also along on one of them. But there were actually three delegations of Oregonians in London at the same time, talking about congestion pricing.
Oh,
so
three different ones?
Yes. Oh. So I was able to meet with the governor and a contingent that was on their way to Doha, but they stopped in London and Stockholm to hear about active transport and congestion pricing. So I was able to get a debrief from them at night, the first night there, to hear what they had heard. And then joined the best practices trip where they talked about congestion pricing, and which is more business folks, 35 to 40 people, depending on who was coming and going from the group at that time. And then also Bloomberg Foundation had sent six cities over to London and then Stockholm to do a deep dive on congestion pricing. So I was able to join Chloe Udaly and Chris Warner, Commissioner Udaly, to hear what they were hearing about congestion pricing. And I guess what I would say is, and I tried, that's why I was late to the meeting, the questions I came away with is, what is Metro's role when we have the state looking at doing tolling value pricing, and we have the city looking at congestion pricing, and they both don't have real stated clear outcomes that they want. What is our role to bring them together to have a conversation about that, but also about what's the future state that we're headed to so that all these systems are working together and we don't end up with separate systems that don't talk to each other that then we have to integrate in 20 years because we have software and hardware that don't actually work together, which is how transit agencies and parking and everybody get disconnected, is that that conversation hasn't happened. So it's really about we have an RFP out, I think it's been finalized, for our study. And the question is, within that scope, how do we play that role, that convening role, and provide that vision for the future, even if we're not the implementer, which is our role. But it suddenly became much more clear about we need to be very, very clear about what outcomes we're trying to achieve.
It's fascinating. It's public perception of, before the barriers, once it's implemented, people love it, and they're like, can't believe we live without it.
Right. Yes and no. 20 years of congestion pricing in a very small cordon in downtown London. They decided to do it initially just to reduce congestion because people could not get in and out, and then came forward about 5-10 years later with a ultra-low emission zone that was overlaid over it. So the clean air issue came in afterwards. So now they have two separate programs running at the same time. Mm-hmm. But we are living in a different day and age with a lot more issues on the table. And we need to be clear about what outcomes were, because we need to be clear on customer service when something is initiated, whether we're actually meeting those outcomes or not. And that's by actually testing different trips, very micro analysis of different trips from different demographic groups and where they're trying to get to and whether we're actually achieving outcomes for them. So it's an interesting conversation that we find ourselves in the middle of. So But thank you for allowing me the time to do that, and I think it was well worth the time and energy. I'd say the most impressive part of the entire trip was getting to Glasgow and being formally announced in a way that literally you would have heard trumpets ringing. I thought that the mayor was being introduced, and then they said me. It was very formal. And suddenly I was speaking. So it was. I was like, "Can you come back and do that every time I speak?"
Who are you speaking?
Presenting.
It was with a heavy accent, and it was like really robust. And it wasn't the bio. It was just like, and her amazingness. Anyway.
So who were you speaking to?
It was our group with a couple Glasgow people just randomly thrown in.
Same old.
We had two PowerPoint presentations, and then all of a sudden, women in green velvet and gold medallions came in and, like, formally announced I'd be speaking. I'm like, okay. Anyway, that was the best part. But thank you. With that, are we talked out? Okay. Thank you. We are.